Welcome to the very first ever live Southside Report. I am Mario Scalise. Along with me, as always, is Jason Gage. And Jason, as I said, this is our first live show via SoxTalk.com.
And since it's live, I just want to point out the fact that we decided for once, usually we actually kind of prepare. We spend like 10 minutes before coming up with some topics, but this time we're just going to flat wing it. And we're going to wing it, and we're going to do one thing a little different too. I want to point out that we are obviously the star part of the show is the Southside Report. It's called the Southside Report. We're going to talk White Sox baseball, and 80% of our shows are going to be White Sox baseball. But we want to point out that during the Bears season, we're going to do a lot more discussion about the Chicago Bears. We're going to talk about the Bulls during the Bulls season, and we're going to try to become a little bit more a sports, Chicago sports-centered show. But obviously, with our focus in season, it's going to be the Chicago White Sox, but we're also going to have quite a bit of Bears talk. And if you're on the streaming thing, you're listening to us live, we want you to be able you can post into that little chat window on the right and come up with comments, questions, anything you want to hear from us. And we're going to do our best to make this thing really interactive. Hopefully starting next week, we'll be able to take phone calls.
We're going to try to do it all.
We got instant message access. DaGage, D-A-G-A-G-E, D-A-B-O-M-B. Is the instant message thing, so send us a message. Obviously, that's my backup username on AIM, so you can send us there. You can send us an email at bullsback@gmail.com.
Or way to give the listener the most difficult I am ever.
Everyone knows I'm the bomb, all right? What can I say?
Well, welcome to the show, and if you're listening now, the White Sox game is going on. It's starting probably in about 10 minutes from now, but seeing that the White Sox are horrible, you're probably not going to take too much time watching them, so maybe you get some giggles out of us. Now, as far as the actual White Sox go, from Kenny Williams' comments just last week, 2 weeks ago, and how he feels that there's a lot of pieces on this team that they could bring back next year and go for it again. And it almost seems like next year you'll see another old team, because what the biggest news probably happening over the last week is Josh Fields going to left field, making the switch from third base to left field, and it almost seems like it's a sign of Joe Creedy coming back.
Yeah, and I think this is fantastic news, because I continue to say that if the White Sox are going to compete next year, and all indications based on what Mark Burley said after he signed his contract with Jermaine Dyes ever since he signed his contract, and then obviously you have the comments from Ozzie Guillen and Ken Williams that say, hey, we're going to be active this offseason. You've heard names like Torrey Hunter thrown about. And the fact of the matter is Joe Creedy at $4.5 million is a good value if he's healthy. He plays a great third base. He is a good offensive player. He's not a great offensive player, but he's better than the guy that, you know, struggled through his back injury this season. And I don't know if he's good as the guy that played 2 years ago in 2006 and had his breakout season, but he's somewhere in between his 2005 numbers and 2006 numbers, and that's above average at third base. And that's a guy that's going to make this offense better. He's going to make the team better because his defense alone makes the pitching staff better, and he's going to help the team win games because Creedy's one of those X-Factors. And I know a lot of people hate hearing about X-Factors. I once said Darren Erstad was an X-Factor. What the hell did I know? Clearly, after saying that, I was wrong. I mean, I've had a whole season of being wrong. This has been a bad year for the White Sox. This has been a bad year for me. I've been predicting things left and right, and they've been just terrible. I said the Sox were going to compete in May. Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, they were out pretty quick. But as far as the whole Creedy Josh Fields thing goes, have you been at all impressed with Josh Fields defensively at third base? I mean, obviously he's no Joe Creedy, and chances are he'll never be a Joe Creedy. But from what you've seen, impressed him at all?
He's made some good plays. He's made some bad plays. The bottom line is he's not a good third baseman. But that's not to say he's not going to be a good third baseman. However, I just want to point out the White Sox have a lot of holes in the outfield. I mean, you maybe have an outfielder in Jerry Owens. I think we've been pretty accurate and consistent about the fact that we don't think he's an everyday player. But Jerry Owens is going to be on this roster next year. He can steal bases. He's a pretty poor defensive outfielder, but he has been better offensively since he came up the second time around. He hasn't been great. He's still got to improve his on-base percentage, and I would prefer not to see him leading off or anywhere at the top of the order or at all being an everyday player. But he's going to have value coming in as a pinch runner, coming in as a late, you know, basically a late pinch runner. I really can't say it'll be a defensive improvement unless you're talking about him coming in for a guy like Josh Fields. But bottom line is the Sox have two more outfield positions to fill now that Jermaine dives in, and Josh Fields can be one of those spots with Joe Creedy at third, and all of a sudden your offense doesn't look quite as bad. You don't quite have as many holes to fill, and if you get an Aaron Rowan or Torrey Hunter in at center field, you actually have a pretty good outfield, especially production-wise, as Hunter or Rowan while neither of them are going to have as good a year as they have had this season, and both are going to break the bank, financially speaking, a Jermaine Dye, Aaron Rowan, slash Torrey Hunter, Josh Fields outfield is going to hit you 70, 80 home runs. No doubt about that. It's going to knock in right around 200 RBI. So, you know, that's a pretty productive outfield for the most part.
It's kind of strange how I think the last time we did the show, when you looked at this outfield, and not saying that things are going good right now, but when you looked at it, Jermaine Dye wasn't signed. You know, center field was wide open. Left field was wide open. And now here we are a few weeks later. Jermaine Dye obviously signed a two-year deal, which I think we'll have to talk about. Jerry Owens looks like he's going to be the starting center fielder next year, whether you agree with it or not. And then you have Josh Fields moving over to left field, which indicates that Joe Creedy is going to come back. Let's talk about Jermaine Dye, though. Signed that two-year deal. $22 million, was it?
Yeah, two-year, $22 million deal, and there's a third-year option in there. It's a mutual player, a mutual option, so it's a team slash player option.
Not exactly surprising. It especially after the deadline went, no trade happened. You kind of had a feeling that they were gonna maybe possibly bring him back, and he did. And I'm kind of skeptical with this signing for the simple fact is I don't know how much Jermaine Dye has in his legs for the outfield. Not necessarily if he could be able to produce as an outfielder next year consistently on every single day basis. And when you have Jim Thome clogging that DH spot and, of course, Paul Konerko at first base, you're really putting yourself in a hole and going back to the same old type of team where it's just old and slow and guys limited to move around. So I'm really, really concerned with Jermaine Dye as far as that, because ideally I'd like to see Jermaine Dye in a platoon situation, not platoon situation, but rotating around the field, playing a little bit of right field, DHing a few days a week. It just doesn't seem like that's going to be at all possible for next year.
Well, I think the key is Jermaine Dye has been a whole totally different player now that he's been healthy. Post All-Star break, this guy's hitting .311 with a .390 on base percentage and 1,042 OPS. He also has 14 home runs, 26 on the season. He's been one of the most productive players in all baseball after the All-Star break. He's showing that he is still an above-average player. He's still a guy that's a borderline MVP candidate over a full season, like he was last season, which was his best season in his career. And he's going to have a lot of value for the White Sox. Now, I will agree with the fact that I don't think he's good enough to play right field every day. I think he's a little below average out there. He still has a better arm than anyone else on the Chicago White Sox when it comes to outfielders. And I would like to see him slide over to left field. But the reality is he's going to play next year in right field. And then in 2009, they'll probably transition him to left field or DH, depending, because Jim Thome will be a free agent. However, we know I've never made it, you know, I've never been quiet on the fact that I think Jim Thome should be moved this offseason. I think he should be moved flat out for one reason. The Chicago White Sox, whether they think they can compete or not next year, need to get younger. They need to get more talented. And Jim Thome is one of those guys that you can use who's not going to be around 2 or 3 years from now. We don't even know if he'll be a major league player 3 years from now. But he could get you 2 or 3 young players that can come in and help the Chicago White Sox now.
Yes.
Hopefully they help him win next year, but they'll definitely help him in 2009, 2010, 2011, and beyond. And that's what Ken Williams needs to start focusing on. Yes, get some talent in, get some guys that can help you win next year, but make sure that those guys are going to be around in 2009, 2010, 2011, because the reality is, next year, it's not going to be easy to win. You don't just come from being one of the worst teams in baseball, second worst to be exact, to all of a sudden being a playoff team. It's very hard to do so unless you're playing in the National League Central and you're the Chicago Cubs or any other team in that division, because we all know if the White Sox were in that division, they may just as well be competing.
Yeah. If the Sox go on and keep on going with the team that they have in the next year, maybe they could be a 500 team, and that's not going to be enough for the American League Central for the next few years. As far as Jim Thome goes, yeah, I think you do have to trade him this offseason, get 1, 2, 3 players, whoever you can possibly get. But I think when you look at this team next year, because once again, it almost seems like this lineup is kind of unfolding. Maybe Uribe is still a question mark, but, you know, Fields looks like he might be in left, Owens in center, you know, Dye in right, Creedy, Uribe is a question mark, Richard second. But if you have that lineup right there, which it looks like they may go with, you're going to have five guys in a lineup in Pierzynski, Creedy, Konerko, Thome, Dye, who are not just getting up there in age, but they're naturally slow players. So when you got a lineup where more than 50% of your players just don't have that athleticism on the bases to get to third base, to score, to get to third base from first, score, you know, from second base on a single, when you don't have these guys and you have more than half of your players who just simply can't run the bases very well, that's kind of scary. Now, if you trade Jim Thome and you're able to put your main guy in the DH spot here and there, you put Konerko or Creedy in the DH spot in there, especially with Creedy come back from with the back surgery, when you do that, you're going to add a little bit more, because now instead of having five guys on your lineup who are slow, you maybe have four. And that changes things around just a little bit, I think.
Plus, you got to look at the fact that they are upgrading speed-wise at second base with Danny Bashar. He's a faster player than Tadahito Gucci. We know he's going to be the starter next year. I think we're pretty confident in that based on the comments Ozzie Guillen's made about him. Yes, he's going to make mistakes as a young player, but he also has shown himself to really be and handle himself like a professional athlete, like a professional baseball player. He looks good. He takes pitches. And while he's not been an offensive machine, he's gotten better each and every day. And defensively, he looks pretty good over there. He has a good arm. He has a shortstop arm. And he's been focused, and we haven't seen those lackadaisical errors that really hurt him down in the minor leagues when he was in the Diamondbacks organization and a little bit when he was in the White Sox organization down in Charlotte.
It's obviously been very hard to watch the White Sox, and because of that, I admit that I haven't really seen a whole lot of Danny Rashard, but for the small times that I have seen him, you know, every other game or so, while he struggled, I think he does have the tools. However, I still think he has a way to go. What I'd like to see the Sox do potentially is try to bring in a veteran second baseman in the offseason for next year and kind of have almost a platoon situation where Rashard gets most of the at-bats, but get a veteran right-handed hitting second baseman in there to kind of play a couple days a week. And those guys are always out there. They're always available. It's not really hard to go get him. I think that would be nice to do, though, because Rashard right now is batting eighth, ninth. That's what he's going to be batting next year. So if you could get a veteran second baseman who could kind of platoon with him, play a couple days a week, and just basically fill in that ninth spot in the order, I think that could be a big help to Rashard.
Yeah, I think that would be good. That'd be beneficial to have that backup there to take a little bit of pressure off Rashard. But the key is Ozzie Guillen's going to have to use that backup right. And that hasn't always been the case when it comes to veteran backups. Ozzie's always shown a preference of playing his veteran guys over the young players, and that's got to change because the reality is if this team's going to go anywhere, it's going to need some young players to step up and compete. Because Josh Fields is going to have a big impact next year if the Sox are going to compete. John Danks is going to have a big impact in that rotation because he's really tailed off as the seasons went on. But this season has been... He stayed healthy. He's pitched a lot of innings. He's had some good performances. He's had his ups and downs. But bottom line is he's got a year under his belt, and he's going to be better next year, and the Sox are going to expect that out of him. And obviously you have Rashard over at second base, who they're going to be counting on. And there are options. You have guys like Mark Grzelwanek.
I believe he just signed with the Royals, I think, a couple weeks ago. But, yeah, a guy like him, I think, is who I'm looking at. Just a solid veteran second baseman. He's not going to go out there. He's not going to do anything special, but he's going to be a good situational hitter. He's going to hold his own defensively and just kind of give some support for him because you don't know. Rashard is young. With any young player, you don't know what's going to happen. And if you go away with Rashard next year and he really, really struggles, you're going to find yourself in a situation where Pablo Ozuna might have to be the starting second baseman. And nothing against Pablo Ozuna, but he's simply not a starter. So I think they need to at least supply themselves with some type of backup option.
But bottom line is Ozuna is more of a starter than Andy Gonzalez, Jerry Owens, Scott Pesednik at this point. I mean, the list goes on and on. The Chicago White Sox team has played a lot of guys and given them a lot of starts that aren't starting quality players.
No. You know what?
Really, they're bench players.
Yes.
I mean,
you look at a guy like Erstad, Andy Gonzalez, yes, these guys are ideal bench players. You put them in any more of a role, and that's what the Sox have been put into this year with, you know, Pesednik and Erstad getting hurt and Creedy going out, where you have a lot of guys playing from the bench, playing a little bit too many games, and that's what happens. But, yes, the Sox team is right now loaded with bench players.
And they're not even good bench players. I mean, that's the reality of it. Andy Gonzalez, he should be here next year, and I'm not a big Andy Gonzalez fan, but I think him at the major league minimum is better than Alex Cintron at the minimum because Alex Cintron has clearly not gotten over his elbow problem, and he makes far too much money off the bench when the Sox are obviously going to spend a little bit more money this offseason, and they need to start focusing and putting some of that money into that rotation, maybe getting a veteran arm in your bullpen. But the reality is you just can't keep paying these bench guys so much money when you have so many problems with your major league roster. So obviously you have Fields. I mean, if Creedy's there at third base, then you have Rashard second, maybe a veteran backup for there, plus Pablo Ozuna. Ozuna could really be that backup, and Ozuna is expected to play later on the season as he took some batting practice yesterday. And I, for one, would be really happy to have a guy like Ozuna back because Ozuna plays hard, and the Sox have really missed that type of attitude out there. They've missed that type of guy that's always kind of a constant spark plug, and he's always been healthy. He had that fluke injury, and I hope he comes back, gets a little bit of at-bats, gets confident in himself, and he's able to come back next year and help the Sox because he's an asset off your bench.
No, he is, and I know some guys really aren't too fond of him, but yeah, he does bring that energy, especially when you throw him in against a left-hander. And for the most part, I think when he started against left-handers, he's had some pretty good success, especially in early game, to kind of start things up. Now, where do you want to jump to next? Obviously, we have Juan Uribe at shortstop, who it looks like his kind of time is winding down. We just have about a month left remaining on the season, so you could pretty much assume that he's not going to be back next year, especially with what I believe is a $5 million option, right?
Yeah, Ozuna has a $5 million option. There's about a $500,000, $300,000, something like that buyout in his contract. And I think the reality is you're going to see the Sox lose Uribe. I mean, that's got to be one of Ken Williams' number one priorities, aside from moving Jose Contreras out of this rotation and out of the organization, because they got to free up his salary if they're going to go after a guy like Torii Hunter, Aaron Rowan, or really anyone else that makes a significant amount of money, because Jose's contract really does kind of...
It holds his team back.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of blocks what Ken can do. And Uribe, obviously, has really, really lost it. He's kind of out of shape. He's lost some range. He was once the premier defensive shortstop in the American League, especially once Omar Vizquel left. And Omar Vizquel is a name that's going to come up. And Omar Vizquel has actually been worse than Juan Uribe this season. And I think it's hard for people to believe that, but that's been the case. And you're obviously taking a chance if you go after a guy like Vizquel and just get older.
Yes,
because
that's
all
you're
doing. The San Francisco Giants have just gotten older over the years. The Baltimore Orioles in the late 90s really just got older, and they've really never recovered from that. And sometimes you just got to know when to stop, when to just take your chances, get some young players in there, and hope they pan out, because that's probably your best chance if you're going to succeed, is maybe sign that veteran for center field, because I do differ with you. I do not think Jerry Owens is penciled in center field. I think they were hoping he'll be the fourth outfielder. And in the worst-case scenario, he will be their starting center fielder. And I do mean that in a sincere way. It is a worst-case scenario having Jerry Owens as your starting leadoff hitter. There have to be better options out there. His under 300 on-base percentage is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. You know, if the Sox had had a shortstop who could potentially be a leadoff hitter, or a second baseman or a left fielder who could potentially be a leadoff hitter, I would have no problem giving Jerry Owens a shot come spring training, because I think he hasn't been outstanding, but I think he has at least put himself in a position to get an opportunity. But with the Sox having so many holes, the last thing you could do, especially if you're looking to contend next year, is to put Jerry Owens in center. Now, if the Sox were looking to take a year off next year and really say, actually, they took a year off this year, but take another year off and say Jerry Owens is going to be our starting center fielder for a while, or at least we want to give him a chance, then that's when you really have to go out there and look about trading a lot of guys. And there was no reason to sign a Jermaine Dye. There was no reason to keep Jose Contreras. But they actually have plans on going forward again next year. So if that is the case, they're going to have to find themselves a different center fielder. And when you look at the market for center fielders, while there's plenty of them out there, every single one of them might be getting way more than they deserve.
Well, we have one comment. I just want to point out that Jerry Owens is dreadful, and they would take Omar Vizquel over Owens. So, I mean, the listeners kind of are indicating just how bad they think Jerry Owens is, because I think some of these same posters or people making comments are the same types that think Vizquel is one of the worst everyday players. So, I mean, I think the perspective is the White Sox fans are fed up with the ineptness and the lack of major league talent, and it stems from years of piss-poor drafts. And just a poor job in the player development standpoint. And from that, I think it's key to discuss what the Sox have to do to change, you know, at that point. We know that they got rid of Dwayne Schaefer, and maybe he was a scapegoat. Maybe he wasn't. But the fact of the matter is the Chicago White Sox are going to have to get more aggressive on the draft front. They're going to have to get more aggressive in the Dominican Republic and elsewhere internationally. And they're going to have to make splashes, and they're going to have to continuously do above-average jobs to make up for the past 5 years of ineptitude. The fact that Josh Field is really the only good major league player that's come out of the organization and helped the White Sox in the last 4 or 5 years really says something. And that ignores the fact of Chris Young, who was shipped out elsewhere and has really produced, and Brandon McCarthy, who has a shoulder issue in Texas, but looks like he's going to have a good major league career. Maybe not a great one, but he should be a solid major leaguer.
And, of course, it's going to start this offseason. Obviously, we heard about the Dwayne Schaefer firing, and I'm sure there's going to be even more changes this coming offseason. So, really, you really don't know how much the Sox could really develop over the next couple of years, because you wonder how much talent they have that they got in the draft over the last couple of years. So, really, it might start with next year's draft, because this year's draft, how has the first-round pick done so far? I know he got hurt pretty quickly, didn't he?
The first-round pick got hurt, and this is Parada you're talking about, but he's came back, and he's been pitching very well for the Great Falls White Sox. It's a rookie league team. The Sox have been taking it slow with all their prospects this year. Really, none of the main prospects have gotten much promotions, and that includes Jack Egbert, who's going to be in the Arizona Fall League and probably not going to be a September call-up, based on the things I've heard, although I do think you should keep your eye out. Gio Gonzalez may be added to the 40-man roster if he's not already on it, Pretty sure he's not on it. And I think you'll see Gio Gonzalez up here on the 40-man in September as one of the many call-ups. Obviously, you also see guys like Andrew Sisco, who is going to be out of options next year. Or no, Sisco has options left. It's Nick Massett who will be out of options. So the Sox are going to have to get evaluations on them and kind of decide what they want to do with those guys. And Massett's a guy that can obviously be traded and probably still has some value, even though he really struggled at the major league level. You'll see a guy like Lance Broadway up here. And that's when I think things are going to get interesting in Chicago, as you start looking at what the Sox have. And part of it is maybe those guys aren't going to be on the major league team next year, but if they produce well, they will increase their trade value, and they may allow Ken Williams to go out and get a young shortstop, maybe get a young outfielder, some guys that can help them lead off. And then obviously they have a guy like John Garland, and he's making the start tonight. And John Garland has actually been awful. We've heard all about Mike Mussina and his struggles in New York. Mussina is actually going to be replaced by Ian Kennedy in the rotation. But little does everyone know that over
Mussina
that same span...
Mussina could potentially replace Garland right now.
Yeah, over that same span, John Garland's been worse. So, I mean, you have to look at the fact that what's going on with John Garland. He was kind of complaining about it not in his shoulder and how it's always bothered him, but you never really heard much about it. And ever since he made those comments, he's really been a shell of what he was. And should the White Sox start to look and consider trading him? I mean, there was already talks last year that they may deal him. He's got a pending free agency, and he could still definitely get you value. I mean, Freddy Garcia got the Sox value last year, and I think John Garland can still get him value this year.
Yeah.
Obviously, not as much as he could have got at the trade deadline when John Garland was still pitching fantastically and had arguably he was the best pitcher on the market and could have landed them 2 to 3 top-notch prospects, but he can still get you one upper echelon guy and one or two very good prospects. And maybe that's something the Sox think about.
Do you think his value is, assuming that he finishes off this month, continues to get knocked around like he has been, and of course there's always been the speculation where maybe he might be hurt, so that's obviously got to drop his value though.
Oh, no doubt. His value's already went down because at one point he probably would have been the best pitcher on the trade block aside from Johan Santana, and that may no longer be the case. And I'm not sure exactly who's going to appear on that block, but obviously you'll have a couple guys that maybe you didn't expect to appear. Guys like Joe Blanton have definitely passed over John Garland in terms of trade value, and the Oakland A's will probably look to deal Blanton. And when you see the package for Blanton, you can probably expect a little bit less than that for John Garland. But if John Garland can turn things around and have a positive September, you know, he'll be right around there with Joe Blanton. And it just kind of depends which GM has a little bit more leverage given the situation.
I mean, and then as far as the one benefit Garland might have right now is the fact that Zambrano did sign, Burley did sign. There's really not that much out there in the free agent market next year. So maybe they throw him out there on the trade market, and they might be able to get something for us. I just actually started looking at this little chat room, and somebody says, I have a question. So they should probably actually say what their question is instead of just calling us over and over again. Right? Are you reading this?
Yeah.
Are you reading this? Okay. Host.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question.
I want to see what the question is.
I need an acknowledgement, he says.
Are we including the financial aspect?
It's like being called on by the teacher.
What's the question? Chew know what you say. This is not Ozzie Guillen talk. What's the question?
Maybe it is Ozzie Guillen.
Okay, here's what he's talking about. He's saying that basically Sisco has one option. We know that's accurate. Arizmo and Massett are out of options. So let's go back and discuss, you know, whether these guys have value. Because I mentioned that Ken Williams could trade for a young shortstop or center fielder. The listener doesn't think that's the case, and he's actually probably right because I don't think Ken Williams is going to look for youngsters. I think he's going to look at guys like Khalil Green. I hope he'll look at a guy like Rafael Furcal in the Dodgers and maybe make a major play for him because Furcal would really solidify the top of the order. He'd solidify the shortstop position, and he would make the White Sox a much better team. And he would keep the age of the Sox at a reasonable spot because Furcal is still in his prime.
I'm sorry, Jace. I'm kind of getting trapped into this little chat room thing. You know, we're live. For all you people who are listening to us live may know right now. Quit reading and talk, you goofs. That's nice. Let's stop reading. What were you talking about now, Jace?
It's a good question. I kind of went back, kind of backtracked a bit, and talked a little bit about Nick Massett and
yes,
Dave Arsma. And let's just get this. Let's just make this clear. Do you think either one of them is going to be on the White Sox next year?
I personally like Nick Massett. I mean, I think his career might be as a long reliever spot starter, but I personally do like him. I don't think the Sox are really going to give him a chance because I'm not necessarily sure how effective he could be out of the bullpen. But I do think, as far as Andrew Sisco goes, and I'm really not too fond of him. I mean, he throws very particularly hard, but he threw hard at Kansas City and never really amounted to anything, so I don't think you could really put much stock in him.
I think in terms of helping the Sox, though, you got to factor in that Nick Massett, if the Sox decide to go with him next year, he's going to have to succeed because any struggles and he gets sent down, he's going to get picked up by someone else, and you're going to pretty much have to deal him or lose him for nothing. While Andy Sisco can spend another year next year in the minors if necessary, and Sisco has really been a guy that's improved. He's made a lot of strides since going down to Charlotte and pitching out of that rotation. His delivery's gotten a little bit more consistent. How consistent, we really don't know until we see him come up and pitch next spring. But I think both of these guys will be given shots in spring training. But unless either one of them looks like they've made significant strides, you will see Ken Williams probably make a spring training deal where he gets someone else based on the fact that a guy like Massett's out of options. He may not have to – obviously, he will not have to trade Andrew Sisco unless a good offer comes around, and he may be best keeping Sisco. And I think Sisco will actually be on the squad next year because I think Matt Thornton will be dealt.
You think Thornton has value?
Yes. Lefties that throw 97 mile an hour, regardless of their lack of production this season or their disappointing performance on the season, still have some value. Not a lot of value, but they have some value.
You know, one, speaking of, having special, special gifts in the bullpen, the Sox did bring in Mike Myers for the final month of the season, kind of as a trial for next year because they do have an option on him. Have you seen him at all?
I've seen enough of him to say, go home, we're done. I'd rather see Heath Phillips or someone else pitch. I mean, Phil Rogers continues to comment on the fact that we got to see Heath Phillips pitch before he's going to become a minor league free agent. So I say, give Heath Phillips, give someone a chance, because Mike Myers doesn't have it. Every time he's came out, he's given up runs, he's given up hits, he's ineffective against left-handed pitchers, and if he can't get lefties out, I don't give a crap about the fact that he actually got righties out at a respectable rate this year. History has shown that he doesn't consistently get righties out, and if he can't get lefties out, he's of absolutely no value, especially in the White Sox already have the best loogie in baseball in Boone Logan.
Well, because we're doing this live for the first time and we're going to go off this chat room, there's a question about Rowan and Hunter. And I don't know if they're directing it at us or maybe just amongst themselves. And, of course, now we get the whole Loogie thing. But let's get into – we'll actually get to the Rowan-Hunter debate right now. Both of them out there, I personally would rather stay away from both of them because I think Rowan might get a whole bunch of offers that he's simply not worth. Hunter, I think, is a definite no-no because he might be looking at about $15, $18 million a year.
Well, I definitely think the way Hunter's played, and based on the fact that Andrew Jones has struggled, Hunter may actually get the biggest contract of all three of these guys.
Yes.
And you have to throw Andrew Jones out there because Andrew Jones has been the premier defensive center fielder over the last, basically since he entered the league, and he's always hit for power. Even though he's had a bad year, he's kind of struggled with injuries, but he's a guy that maybe you can get at value. Maybe you can get a $13, $14 million a year deal for Andrew Jones, and maybe he doesn't get a 5 or 6 year contract. Because I think Torrey Hunter will get that. I think Rowan will get 5 or 6 years. The question is whether Rowan, if you can get Rowan at 4 years, $40 million, and I think that's a little unreasonable because I think Rowan may get up to that $44 million to $48 million plateau over a four-year deal. I think he can definitely average 11 or 12 years, and I think some team will give him a five-year deal. At that point, I may just say you're better off spending more money getting Torrey Hunter, who's a premier player. But for $3 or $4 million less, I would lean to Aaron Rowan because you know what he can do in Chicago. You know how he'd fit in. And you know that he could probably bring back some of that instinct to this club. But really, I don't think you can go wrong either way as long as you don't start getting into that 5 or 6 year deal.
I would definitely take Rowan over Hunter just for the simple fact is I've never really been impressed with Hunter offensively. And Hunter is in his 30s right now, right? And a 5-6 year deal, you have a guy who's playing center field, and that's kind of his asset is his ability to play center field. In 2 years, he's not going to be much of a center fielder defensively. So you basically have a hitter. Now, do you have much of a hitter for 15 or whatever million dollars it's going to be? No. Rowan, I think he could produce a little bit for you, but not for the amount of money he has. And sadly, as much as I don't like Andrew Jones, the guy has proven himself over his career that he could be an offensive a good offensive player. So even if he were to decline defensively over the years and decline in speed over the years, at least he might be able to bring something to the table at the plate as he gets older.
Yeah, I definitely agree that eventually Hunter will move out of the center field and probably Andrew Jones to a point too. But you also have to factor in the fact that Torrey Hunter will be moving off the AstroTurf, and that will be better for his knees. That'll help his longevity.
True.
And he'll be going to a park where he can hit even more home runs. And Torrey Hunter does have a lot of power. There's no doubt, I think, that Torrey Hunter is more of a guarantee to hit 30 home runs again, maybe even for the next 3 or 4 years, as opposed to Aaron Rowan pretty much putting up the season that he's having right now. I'd put more of my money on Hunter backing it up and producing similar to how he has this year than Rowan, who's been just off the charts this season.
How about Mike Cameron? Isn't he a free agent?
Cameron's a free agent. The Padres really like his defense, and while he strikes out a lot, I think Cameron could be a good value pick. It just kind of comes down to the difference of what a guy like Mike Cameron nets you or Aaron Rowan, as opposed to a guy like Torrey Hunter or Andrew Jones. Because if the dollar value isn't much and the years in contract is the same, I always think you're better off going for the best player at that position than the mediocre one, because I think more teams get killed signing the mediocre guy to a contract that's just way ridiculous than the other way around. For example, Alfonso Soriano, yes, he was overpaid, but my statement was always the case that at least he is one of the supreme or most talented offensive players in the league. And no, he's not as good as Alex Rodriguez, Albert Pujols, Ryan Howard, any of those guys offensively. But he is in that upper echelon. So at least you know whether he can play center field or not. And I think that's still, you know, up in the air. And I think the Cubs are going to probably look for a starting center fielder. You at least know the fact that you're getting a premier player. Even if you overpay for that, you're getting a good player.
Well, then, as far as I'm concerned, it might look like that the Sox do plan on having a new center fielder next year. They might have to be pulling off a trade, because I'm going to say it again. I'm not too fond of any of those center fielders out on the market. Then again, I am the type of person who I'm still living in 2000, 2001, 2002, where contracts weren't as bad as they are today. So maybe that's just me. But I would try to stay away from all of those guys without question, especially with the age, when you've taken the age for pretty much all of them except maybe Rowan.
Yeah, they're all relatively close in age. Rowan is clearly the youngest of those that bunch. But I'm going to throw out another name, Willie Harris. Now, you may ask, why would the Braves let him go? But if the White Sox stepped up and made a good offer to Harris, and I don't know how much Harris liked it in Chicago, we know he didn't exactly get the best treatment from Ozzie Guillen. But he seemed to fit in on that bench. He did some valuable things for the White Sox in 2005. And while he never lived up to his hype in Chicago, he is quietly having a very productive season in Atlanta. He plays center field, and he would be a legitimate leadoff hitter. And he can draw walks.
I was a fan of Willie Harris. I'm not necessarily sure if he could be a leadoff hitter next year, because I think he is going to kind of take a few steps back. But I've always been a fan of him. I always think that if he ever actually got an opportunity to play over, you know, even a half a season, I think he would produce. But the thing is, you get him center field, no, he's not going to produce for you offensively to really justify that, I don't think. Unless he made a big turnaround in center field over the last couple of years, I'm not necessarily sure that's an option. Now, if you maybe want to get him, maybe throw him in a left field, if Josh Fields isn't, if Creedy is definitely out of the out of the picture, or maybe if you trade Tomey and Josh Fields can maybe move around a little bit more, I'm not necessarily sure Willie Harris is, as much as I like him, and as much as I think he could produce, and I'm just not really sure the Sox would be wise to go after him. And I think that's kind of the problem, is that right now when you look at this free agent market, when you look at – there just doesn't seem to be much out there without paying a whole lot of money.
Well, I do want to point out I was wrong. One of the listeners has corrected me. Willie Harris is not actually a free agent. I think he has one more year left under arbitration before he's officially a free agent. And clearly the Braves are not going to non-tender him. But you're also clearly dead wrong, because the way Willie Harris has played this year, he'd be an absolute bargain. And he would have been a tremendous asset for the White Sox at the top of the order. In fact, I think the White Sox would be better team.
And I'm learning today, because I didn't know Mike Caruso was still playing baseball.
Mike Caruso
that was a fall. A quick fall.
And I think we officially know that Caleb's is you. Dreamer 282, because Mike Caruso, well, you know, let's just say Caruso was one of the ugliest guys to play with the Chicago White Sox, and I'm just saying that so I can piss off Caleb's, because I actually think Caruso was fun to watch for his 1 year of decency, and why not sign him? Could he be any worse than Juan Uribe? As long as Caruso's gotten away from getting high,
what?
He could be a valuable asset.
You're joking when you say that, right?
I'm not joking when I say that.
If you had, let's say there's no other options out on the short side market. They can't trade for anyone without giving up way too much. There's nobody out there in the free agent market that they could grab. Is Juan Uribe kind of like a last-ditch resort to bring back?
Oh, yeah. Uribe will be the last-ditch resort. And Caruso obviously will not be back. I thought you asked if I was joking about him being high. And I was thinking to myself,
oh, no. You're probably right about that.
Yeah, and Freddie Garcia wasn't high half the time he was on the mound for the White Sox. I think we all can figure some things out. You know, Barry Bonds is a clean baseball player. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, the list goes on. Right. Lance Briggs, you know, didn't crash his car. It was stolen, all right? Come on here.
Yeah, that was kind of awkward. The guy, he goes and gets a tow truck there and then reports it stolen. Isn't that the order? He kind of knew where it was, reported the tow truck, called for a tow truck, and then reported it to be stolen?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what happened. And I just want to point out that for those of you that are new to the show, I am Jason Gage, and the other guy, the not-so-smart guy, the guy with the Italian accent, he is Mario Scalise. Mario, speak on up real quick.
Yes, that's me.
You're like, hee-hee. There, that's Mario.
Well, I probably have more of the Chicago accent, I would bet. And I don't know what a California accent sounds like, so I mean, maybe you should be, you know, I'm not exactly sure. But, yeah, I do have more of the Chicago accent, so if you're wondering who the jackass is, it is me.
And we got another comment saying that someone would believe that Barry Bonds didn't juice over the fact that Lance Briggs is telling the truth on this and there was nothing wrong. You know, that Lance Briggs isn't covering something up. And, you know, we'll just take it for what it is. I'm not going to get into that too much. But that's an interesting connotation. I'm pretty sure that I think everyone on here can pretty much agree to the fact that Barry Bonds has, at one point or another, taken some sort of substance that benefited his career.
As have the other 70% of players.
And that's really the case. I think if you really want to bring up Barry Bonds, then you could probably bring up, you know, 50, 60, 70% of anyone that was really in the upper echelon of production. And, you know, the obvious true exception to that is Frank Thomas, but that's about it. I mean, I can't really think out of any upper echelon premier offensive player who hasn't spoken out against it at one point or another. You know, maybe Alex Rodriguez isn't juicing, but do we even know that? I mean, you really don't. So if you put one guy in it, I think you have to kind of put all of them in it.
And as far as Thomas being clean, there was a post on there. Nobody obviously knows. Anyone could be doing steroids. The smallest guy in baseball could be doing steroids. But you kind of go off of a person's actions over the course of his career. And Thomas has obviously been pretty strong and pretty strong. Obviously, he's a strong guy, but he's been pretty much against steroids for quite some time and for steroid testing for quite some time. So you kind of at least have to assume that if there was one guy in baseball, or at least of the big guys in baseball, that you could say most likely isn't taking steroids, you would have to maybe say Frank Thomas.
Maybe you're onto something. Maybe
the odds might be still 60-70%, but
what about David Eckstein? Could he be doing roids? Could I mean, he's obviously going to be one of the guys the White Sox end up looking at shortstop, and probably going to be the type of guy they end up getting. And I think I take Eckstein over. I take over a guy like Vizquel. And I am not the biggest David Eckstein fan, and we all know I have an infatuation for most guys that come out of the Angels organization. Hence the fact that I've completely said that they should have got Sean Figgins for the last year and a half. Turns out Sean Figgins has been the most productive player in baseball since the All-Star break, at least from a batting average standpoint. Shows up, I do know something.
And you said in the beginning of the show that you've been wrong on many occasions this year, and here you go. You were right on Sean Figgins all along.
Yeah, every dog has its day. And I got to point out the fact that I was right on that because everyone has ripped me apart for my fact that I like the Angels. And I always point out the fact that the Angels are in the playoffs every year for the most part. And there's a reason behind that. They have a lot of good players. And a guy like Sean Figgins was available for a long time and the Sox could have him. And the Sox would be better off with a guy like him because he really fits into what Ozzie Guillen likes. And now they're not going to be able to get him.
Well, really, a big problem going into this year, it's not that Scott Pitsenik is a bad player. I'm not saying he's great. I'm not saying he's good. But it wasn't a horrible player. The problem is when you look at him, you look at Erstead, they were injured prone going into the season, and to rely on them at all would be pretty stupid. Whereas Sean Figgins, from what I understand, he's been rather healthy in his career. You probably could have got him cheap considering how poor he played last year. I believe he did struggle a bit last year. You could have gotten him pretty cheap and maybe have yourself a productive leadoff hitter or at the very least a ninth hitter.
Are you implying? I want to know your take right now. Put it on the air for the listeners. And I kind of am afraid of what people may say because I want to know whether you think Scott Pesenik will be back next year. And should he be back?
No, he Answer shouldn't both. Be back. And once again, it has nothing to do with his ability because I think he can be a productive player at the major league level, whether it's a leadoff hitter or batting less. Problem is he's not going to stay healthy. He's not. If he comes back next year, he will be hurt April 5th, if not before then. So why even bother with him? And really, he's not really a bench player because he can't really play defensively too well in the outfield. So no, he should not be brought back. I don't think the Sox are planning on bringing him back. I think a fallback option is going to be Josh Fields, although he might be the primary option right now.
I definitely think the writing is on the wall with the Sox all of a sudden really changing things. They pretty much went a complete 180 on the fact that they previously had said that they're going to play Josh Fields at third base for the remainder of the season, and now it's the exact opposite. They're going to play him at left field for the remainder of the season, barring some type of emergency, because they're going to let him play left field. And there must be some type of new relevant information on Joe Creede's back that the Sox are really starting to feel confident and they really believe he'll be back. And I want to point out now about Jerry Reinsdorf, who discussed a little bit about the whole situation, about how, you know, they couldn't predict this, they couldn't predict that. And Jerry Reinsdorf, in his interview, ended up saying that he gave the organization an A. He graded Ozzie Guillen an A as a manager. And I don't see how any player in this team could get an A when you're the second worst team in baseball. I think every single person, whether they had a productive season or not, should be giving themselves an F because the overall goal of a franchise is to win games. And the White Sox were absolute failures at that. And when I hear the ownership actually condoning it, saying it was a great Ken Williams' best offseason, I think it's a big, big black eye for this team, and it makes me wonder what is going on ownership-wise, because someone needs to be sending a message down to the fact that Ken Williams and Ozzie Guillen did fail this year, and I think a lot of that failure is due to the players, but bottom line, Ken Williams and Ozzie Guillen are going to be held accountable, because Ken Williams brings the players here, and Ozzie Guillen's job is to put them in a position where they can succeed, and he, you know, they both failed at that. And I'm
they
not saying
did, yes.
And you fire him, but I think it's interesting how the Houston Astros, who lost to the White Sox in the World Series, just dropped the ball and got rid of their GM and manager.
Yes.
Right?
Which I would bet is very, very, very rare for a team to get rid of both the guys, because usually you're going to put the blame on the manager saying, well, the GM got you the talent and you couldn't produce, or you're going to put the blame on the GM saying you didn't give the manager the players to win with, and in that case, they got rid of both of them saying both of you guys have just not done the job and they're completely overhauling it.
But here's what I want to know. Let's say, I'm not saying you panic this year, but the White Sox have been worse than the Houston Astros. The White Sox have been, since the All-Star break of last year, pretty much had one of the biggest collapses of any World Series team in the history of baseball. Teams do not go from the World Series champions to a season, really an All-Star break. They were a good team last year at the All-Star break. At one point, like within 1 or 2 days of the All-Star break, they had the best record in baseball. And they have completely collapsed. We're talking like 35, 40 games over 500 or more. Since the All-Star break of last season. And that doesn't happen overnight. And that doesn't give me a sign that all of a sudden things are going to magically be better in 2009, especially given the fact that you're going to have pretty much the same nucleus of ballplayers back next season, and you don't have a lot of young talent coming up to replace him, and you're not in a position, not to mention there isn't enough free agent talent out there this year because it's a poor free agent class, sans the center field position, and you don't have that position to actually go out free agent-wise and get better. So I want to know how they're going to do it when they don't have the minor league talent and they don't have the money to go out and get three or four key guys, nor are those three or four key guys out there. So I kind of am interested to see what happens with Ken Williams. And I think next year, bottom line, if this team doesn't get better and doesn't – I'm not saying they have to make the playoffs next year because I kind of think that's going to be pretty tough to do. But I think they need to be in a position where 2009 they make the playoffs. And if that's not a realistic case, then they need to both be fired next season.
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason. This is going back to your comments way before. There's no reason for Jerry Reinsdorf to give anyone in this organization an A. Say it's a failure, pretty simple, and then look forward to next year. And as far as, you know, comparing them to the Astros, the Sox did play better. They did win 90 games last year. And if you want to make any excuses, you could say they kind of tired out at the end of the year. But this year is all on them. It's all on Kenny Williams, and we said this before. It's all on Kenny Williams for not putting together a bullpen. It's all on Ozzie Guillen for really just not getting this team, I'm not going to say ready, but offensively this team has been an extremely boring team. And what? And he doesn't have the tools, he doesn't have the athletic guys and the fast guys, but it is still a team that he obviously liked going into the year. And if he had any issues with this team from a health standpoint or from a speed standpoint, he should have brought it up to Kenny Williams. And he obviously didn't. He was happy with what he was going into, so he should have been able to play with what he had, and he didn't. So Guillen definitely deserves some blame this year, like he's actually taken it himself. Although I don't know if he's just necessarily saying that in front of the media and doesn't really give a shit behind closed doors. But the blame goes all around.
Well, let's just rewind. Let's rewind back to spring training. I think I remember Ozzie Guillen. I don't have the exact quotations in front of me, but I remember him saying if this team doesn't make the playoffs, it would be considered a failure and that he failed. That him, Ozzie Guillen, failed. And Ozzie's never been one that's been shy to take the criticism, and he's taken the blunt of the criticism. But over this past year, you've had failures out of their offense. You've had failures out of the pitching staff. You've had guys like John Garland, you know, who's really fallen apart late. But you've also had young guys that haven't stepped up. You had the bullpen disaster. You've had a lot of guys taking steps back, per se. And then you had the recent report that this team is not going to make any changes to the coaching staff as long as they all keep doing their jobs for the remainder of the season.
But what's doing their jobs?
That's exactly what I want to know. I mean, at some point, don't you have to be held accountable for the production? Yes, the players on the field have failed. But bottom line, when the players on the field feel, eventually the managers and the coaches are going to take the blame because they are the scapegoats. They are easier to be removed than the players because the players have guaranteed contracts and they make a lot more money than coaches, and it's easier to get rid of the coaches. And I'm not saying Greg Walker has failed. I've never said Greg Walker is a failure. But I am saying that when you've consistently struggled offensively, that you need to make a change. I mean, there must be something going on with
really,
the Chiefs. You know, what's being said isn't being done.
And when it comes to hitting coaches, I bet in most cases the hitting coach really doesn't deserve to be fired because they're all pretty much probably preaching the same thing and then just players just aren't listening, or after a while they just simply kind of zone the guy out. But at some point during the year when your offense is struggling, especially in the case of the White Sox, it's not like they were losing a lot of guys. They still had the heart of that lineup in for many games and they weren't producing. You fire the hitting coach. Even if it's not his fault, you fire the hitting coach, get somebody in there to kind of restart this offense. Because when the hitting coach is fired, the players have to look at themselves and say, listen, coach is fired, it's on us now. Because if we don't produce over two coaches, it's all on us. And they could have maybe put the pressure and the heat on the players and they just simply didn't do it. And it might just go back to the Sox just feel that, you know, 2005 was a great year and they're trying to hold on a little bit too much from the coaching staff on down to the players.
Yeah, and while I rip apart a lot of these players, I will always think for 2005. And we can't forget 2005, but at the same time, we got to move on. Because the reality is 2005 was great in 2005 and it'll be in every Sox fan's memory for the rest of their lives. But now it's 2007 and it's going to be 2008 and I don't give a shit what you did in 2005. When it comes to the current play, you will always be renowned as a great player when your career ends for what you did in 2005 for the White Sox, and that goes down to the guys like Jeff Blum that had one at-bat in the playoffs, really. So Ken Williams needs to get over who contributed last year, and Ozzie Guillen, to a point, needs to get past that and start looking at what's going to benefit the club this year, next year, following years, because I think they've really failed in that sense. And it's kind of funny because in 2006, Ken Williams was really gutsy. Getting rid of a guy like Aaron Rowan was considered an integral part of that club for a guy like Jim Thome, and that was a good trade. I will never slam that trade, and this is coming from someone that's always said that he's wanted Jim Thome out of the franchise because I'm not a fan of prototypical DHs. I prefer to use your DH as an option where you can play the matchups, you can give guys days off, you can move a guy from right field to DH occasionally. If you want to play a little bit speed because you're in a slump or you're going up against a really good pitcher, you can bring in some more speed on that team and use the DH spot that way. You can do a lot of things with a DH, I think, with a creative manager like a guy like Mike Socha. Again, my angel love comes in. I'm biased on that. But you can do those type of things. And when you have Jim Thome there, you really can't. Plus, if you do make it to the World Series, not to mention the interleague play games, you're taking one of your best bats and putting him on the bench because that's what happens with Jim Thome whenever we're in those situations because he doesn't play first base.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I do have some issues with Jim Thome, but really it does stem from that. I don't think it makes a difference who it is. Ideally, for my team, I'd like to have a situation at DH where I could kind of rotate guys in. And it's not necessarily putting guys on the bench, but putting the right fielder at DH once in a while, the third baseman at DH in a while, kind of mixing it up, getting everyone fresh, so that when those interleague games come, when those, you know, potential World Series comes, whenever, you don't have to worry about, oh, well, this guy's gone. Because right now, next year, Jim Thome, he's a DH only. And when you look at Jim Thome, he's just a DH. He's not playing the field, obviously. So he's only contributing to you offensively. Now, when you take into account all the injuries that he's going to have, because he's going to sit out a few games for injury, and you're going to take into account that he's probably batting about 200 against lefties, how much of the season can he really be of value to you? If he's only playing 130 games a year, and of those 130 games, he's facing a lefty, how many times would you say he would face a lefty over the course of the year? 20 times? 10, you know, 20 times or so? or if you would take into account late in the games, there's only a rather small percentage where he's actually out there on the field facing right-handed pitchers and producing for you. And that's what's kind of the scary thing. You kind of like to have a little bit of versatility where you could get guys who could do other things.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I want to point out that Kalis points out the fact that, you know, the Angels, they're one of the main reasons, and this is very true, that they don't have a slugger in the DH position is because they don't have one. I mean, they're worse in the American League. I think they're maybe the worst team in baseball when it comes to home runs, and they've always looked for that big bat, and they are really a big bat away from winning the World Series. And as much as I slam and I say I like their approach, if the Angels could get Jim Thome, they would get him in a heartbeat, and my personal opinion, they would be the World Series favorites, as opposed to the Boston Red Sox, who I think currently are just a notch above the Angels in terms of the 1 and 2 teams as far as what I'm handicapping for the World Series. But true. We know how right I've been this season.
Well, because, yeah, well, when you look at the Angels the past few years, yes, they have been lacking that big bat, and I'm sure if Jim Thome was out there for them to take, outside of a trade, because it seems like the Angels are always gun-shy to pull off a trade, I'm sure if he was out there and they were able to add him to his team and make him primarily a DH, I'm sure they would do that in a heartbeat. At the same time, you don't necessarily, if you're looking for a big hitter, it doesn't necessarily have to be a DH. You know, that big hitter could also play third base. It could also play left field or first base or whatever the case may be.
I completely agree, and I also think in the Angels' case, you also have to look at the fact that they have a lot of speed at other positions, so they really already are versatile, so they don't need to use a DH spot necessarily to be versatile, and it'd be more beneficial for them and their situation to have a power hitter as a DH. Mm-hmm. Well, I think in the White Sox situation, you have a power hitter in right field, you have a power space. You when healthy, you have a power hitter at third and Joe Crady. You're now going to have Josh Fields in left field or third base, probably left field, as another power hitter. So you have power hitters at different positions. So now I think your weakness is at the speed position, and you can get a guy that has speed, but he also has to be able to hit, get on base, hit first, hit some double. You got to be productive, but you can use that as a DH.
And, of course, I mean, there's obviously the issue if you lose Thome, you don't have that left-handed bat in the middle lineup, that left-handed power bat. Przyski does not count. He's really ideally should be a 6-7 hitter, 6 being tops. So you lose that left-handed bat. But when you're a team like the White Sox, that they're one of the worst in baseball. Statistically, they're one of the worst offenses in baseball. They're slow. When you're looking for energy, that's your primary focus, is looking for a little energy, looking for a little speed, a little athleticism, a little youth. So if you're looking for that, who cares about the whole lefty-righty thing? And just because you don't have a left-hand hitter in the middle lineup doesn't mean you can't have a left-hand hitter around them. You can't have a lefty leading off or batting eighth or whatever the case may be.
And then we have some really good debate going on. For those of you that haven't listened to us before, this is our first live edition of the Southside Baseball Report, and it's not just going to be a baseball report from now on. I'm Jason Gage. The other person you're listening to is Mario Scalise. We're usually the two regulars that do this show, but now that you can come to our site live, there's also a chat box where you can ask us questions, but we're also having some great discussion amongst the other people that are chatting. And right now, the big debate going on is with this Jim Thome discussion, and you have people saying, like Caleb's going, if you are going to compete in 2008, you have to rely on Jim Thome. If you plan on competing and winning next year, you need his production because you can't replace it elsewhere. And then you have the vice side, the flip side, guys like White, who are saying, hey, you can trade him, get value for him, get those young players. I lean on this side, and then maybe get a guy like Cliff Floyd or some type of veteran that you could play that maybe he doesn't play the field, but he's less injury prone. And I don't know, Cliff Floyd's pretty injury prone, but they can give some type of production and do a little something out there.
Plus, at the field, because it also depends how confident they are in Jermaine Dye coming back and producing like he did last year. Not just producing, you know, decent numbers, but producing like he did last year. How confident that Joe Crede can not only come back, but produce offensively. How much Josh Fields will progress. I mean, if they're confident that these other guys, Canerico and Przyski, could produce offensively, then losing Jim Thome isn't a big thing. But if the Sox have some serious doubts with a lot of these other players, and they look at Crede as simply just a $5 million, a rather cheap $5 million a player to play defense at third base, then I think you may not have any choice to bring back Thome. But going back, it all depends how they go at it in the offseason. If they add any pieces, and looking at the free agent market, there may not be many out there available. But I think you do have to throw Thome out there in the market, see what you get. Even if you get 1, 2 decent young players who you feel could come in and produce next year, you might have to at least look into it.
I think the thing is, if you can get a Howie Kendrick, and I'm not saying you necessarily get him, or some other type of prospect from a team like the Angels, because I think they are a perfect match in that stance, then you got to consider it. You got to think about doing it, because it could really make the White Sox better long term. And you can find a way to get a bat. You can find a way to get a power bat. They're not that difficult to get. Plus, the biggest weakness on the Chicago White Sox, aside from their bullpen, aside from the fact the pitching staff hasn't been that great, or the lack of team speed, yeah, we clearly have a lot of weaknesses as a Chicago White Sox team, is the fact that it really struggles against left-handed pitching. And Jim Thome, aside from his on-base percentage, which is consistent whether he's against lefties or righties, is not productive against left-handed pitching. So he really doesn't help the White Sox in the area that they struggle most, left-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. And they did win a World Series with a righty-dominant lineup, albeit that lineup was not as good as the lineup in 2006 when Jim Thome was producing, Jermaine Dye was producing, Joe Creedy was producing, Paul Konerko was producing. I mean, that was a far better lineup, even though the White Sox didn't
win. It had more balance throughout, and that's the thing. I mean, you could say, oh, we're going to give it to Thome, and it will be fine because we were fine in 2005, but they had more balance throughout. There's a lot of question marks going into next year, and like I said, it all depends how big those question marks are in the White Sox mind, because if they think that a lot of these other guys can produce, there's absolutely no reason to keep Jim Thome back if you could get something of value for him on the market.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt. I completely agree with you on that. And I think we're kind of beating a dead horse here, because you either fall on one side or the other side. I really don't think there's many people that are in between on the Jim Thome situation. And obviously, for all we know, we can never even trade Jim Thome, because he has that full no-trade clause. Mm-hmm. And he's always indicated that he would either go to the Cubs, another team in Chicago, or pretty much Cleveland Indians. Those are like the two places he would go. And maybe he'd consider a team like Cincinnati, but obviously there's no DH there, so that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Two teams, yeah. Go to the Cubs with Derek Lee or the Indians with Travis Hafner. Thanks, Mr. Thome.
Yeah, so you don't have options there. Plus, how realistic is it that Jim Thome is going to go to the National League anyway, where, you know, you really don't fit in, because he's not a first baseman. He's kind of been pretty consistent with the fact, and the club's been consistent, that he really can't play first base and stay healthy. And we've seen he's had enough trouble staying healthy as a guy within the Angels.
I mean, the only way I see that happening is maybe, and the Sox, I think, are only paying Thome about $7 million a year because the Phillies are picking up the other half, I believe. But if they were to trade him to a National League team, picking up $7 million on a guy who may not be able to play first, is the Sox may have to, at that point, kind of give some money in the deal, and I'm not necessarily sure that would happen.
And then from another perspective, in terms of value, and I think it's good when you talk trade value with Jim Thome, and this is going to be the end of the Jim Thome discussion, is I may overvalue Jim Thome when I say you can get a guy like Howie Kendrick, because the Angels are absolutely huge fans of Kendrick. They think he will win a batting title, and they feel similar to him as the White Sox did when Maglio Ordóñez was a young player coming up, and everyone always said how Maglio was going to one day win a batting title. And aside from Ichiro, Suzuki has been fantastic this year. Mags is right in that position where he could very well win a batting title, and I wouldn't be shocked to see it. And the other poster comment says basically you get more like a guy like Willie Ibar and Joe Saunders from the Angels. And I don't have a problem with that, because I think Saunders helps your rotation, gives you another lefty in there to go with Danks and Burley, and it allows you to move John Garland and Jose Contreras, who can also, in Garland's case, get you some talent. And we've discussed that, but we've talked about these pitchers' failures, and I want to turn it to the guy behind the plate. Is some of the blame of this to go on A.J. Pierzynski and, to a lesser extent, Toby Hall, who's been the most worthless player in the major leagues this year?
Well, in Toby Hall's case, he didn't really get a fair shot this year. He got hurt in spring training, obviously ruined his shoulder, and I'm sure that kind of slowed him down. I mean, I think he could be a productive player. As far as Pierzynski goes, it's a possibility, but I think really the problems kind of were early in this year. Whatever's happening now with Garland and Contreras or whatever, it's already too late in the season, so who cares really how much they're struggling. The problems came early in the year with this bullpen, and I don't know if Pierzynski had much to do with the bullpen struggles. It was just simply the bullpen not producing. That said, and I'm going to vent a little bit, I'm getting sick and tired of A.J. Pierzynski talking about how everybody on the team is hustling, everybody on the team is running out ground balls. When you watch him play, it's pretty clear he's not running out ground balls. So you can't go in front of the media and talk about, we're all still playing hard, we're all still have a lot of heart, we're all still running out ground balls, when you yourself aren't doing it.
Yeah.
Now, I know that's completely outside of what you're talking about with his game calling behind the plate, but that's just one little issue that I have with A.J. Pierzynski.
Yeah, I definitely think A.J. has maybe not been as strong as the game callers he's once been, and he's clearly very weak behind the plate at throwing guys out, and it would be nice if the Sox had a guy with a good arm that could come in and throw guys out. We know Toby Hall can't do that on the bench. I cannot ever slam the Toby Hall signing because I don't think there was any single person out there that didn't think the Sox were going to have one of the strongest 1-2 tandems of catchers in baseball when that move was made. No one could predict he was going to hurt his arm. No one could predict that he'd have one arm. RBI, that he'd have more pass balls and walks and RBIs combined on the season. The guy's been an absolute joke, and I'll give him credit for being ballsy and coming back with his shoulder injury, but he should have shut it down a long time ago. And I've actually read where basically his rehabbing of the shoulder was what he did to get healthy and repair his shoulder, so he's not going to end up undergoing any type of surgery, or it's not expected that he will, unless they find that there's something bad going on there that never got healed and there's still a major problem with that. So I asked, is he ever going to get better? So maybe you consider just cutting him and going with a guy like Donnie Lucia as an athletic backup that can throw guys out, and maybe he just brings a little bit different of an attitude. Because if you get enough young players up here, and hopefully some of them have some talent, you at least get some guys that have some fight because they're playing for something. They're playing for a lot of things. You have a guy like Damian Miller who's brought up. He's a great defensive catcher. He's not a great offensive player, but that righty, and he would really help him because he can hit left-handed pitching.
I mean, I think if they were to bring back Toby Hall, I don't know, Senator, I would necessarily have a problem with it, assuming he is healthy and there's nothing serious with that shoulder, because he did produce prior to this year. And like you said, when they made that signing, it looked like the Sox were going to have one of the best catching duos in the majors, with Przysky being a lefty and Hall being a right-handed batter who could hit lefties very well. As far as Damian Miller goes, I'd be all for him. I'd be all for grabbing a guy like him. Once again, you're talking about a backup catcher, though. And you really do wonder, Przysky, because when they got Toby Hall, Przysky was not too happy with the idea of not playing every single day. So you kind of wonder how that would happen if the White Sox did get a catcher. Because I think it is clear. I think Przysky's time needs to be cut down a little bit. Because maybe that's just a personal preference. And I think if that is the case, I think Przysky might have some issues with any backup catcher that comes in and takes any time away from him.
Bottom line, this White Sox team is going to have to get better. And I'm not saying you have to get better at the bench, because they first, before they do anything else, they need to get better at position-wise, because they have a lot of weaknesses where they're well below league average at various positions. Center field, left field currently, catcher, they're above average. Despite all the knocks we have on Przysky, he's still above average hitter. He's still pretty decent game caller. Can't throw anybody out. He's mediocre blocking pitches, but you have a shortstop well below average, one of the worst three in baseball. At third base, the production they've gotten is below average for the most part over the course of the season, although Josh Fields as a rookie has been above average and it's been better than expected. So basically, I just listed off a number of positions where you're below average, and that doesn't even speak of the bullpen, where aside from the closer position, this team is vastly below average. And we have to tip our hat to Bobby Jenks, who's been fantastic. He's been one of the few bright spots of this team, especially from a veteran perspective. And I just want to give a quick update to the White Sox game for those listening. It is a 3-1 ball game in the third inning. So Jim Thome, I think, has knocked in all three runs. Not positive on that, but he had a couple RBI hits. So he's been producing, despite all the lack of credit I give him. So we got to back that up. And then we're going to take a quick little turn to the Chicago Bears, unless anyone else has anything that you think we really missed the ball on, and we can't wait another week for the next time we do the show, where hopefully we can get your calls in and get some of your voices on here.
Yeah, you know, I want to
bring up good ideas.
Quickly get on that. I'm not necessarily sure how technical we'll be able to get. We'll be able to allow phone calls, but I think at the very least we might be able to have it set where if you were to want to come on the show for maybe 5, 10, 20 minutes, however, and be a guest, we could kind of set that up where you could kind of email us your phone number and we'll kind of get you on air. So at the very least, I think we might be able to do that, because I'm not necessarily sure if we're going to have the phone call capabilities, at least next week goes.
But we will be working on it. We strive to do that.
At the very least, you know, this chat room seems to be going rather okay, although I think some of them are going off tangent here a little bit. But, you know, we have the email, which I'm not necessarily sure if anyone's used. We have the instant messenger. We'll probably set up an instant messenger name where people can kind of get in touch with us rather quickly. So we're going to try to improve the interactivity of the show, because there's no point of going live if the listeners, although very few listeners, don't have the opportunity to kind of get their opinion heard.
Yeah, and I am going to back up what I see on this message. Caleb's is going to be booked as our first ever guest host from our live show. So he's going to be the very first on there. And obviously we'll also have guys like Heads brought in, Alex Stearns,
Yelling,
Dan Santa Romita, when we talk some minor league baseball. And we're going to try to make a little bit of a merge, and we're going to try to get some minor league players on now that we have live shows, because we have some connections that we can pull, and we hope you'll enjoy those type of things. And we hope that you guys will be interactive and you guys are listening. And we hope you guys enjoy what we're doing, because we know we're not experts. We know we're not – well, I consider myself an expert, but we know we're not professionals. So any type of feedback you can give us is fantastic. So we definitely appreciate it. I love the interaction here. I like seeing everyone that's on here listening, and hopefully you guys enjoy it. So always give us feedback on the boards. Just make a post, you know, whatever. It's very cool.
Yes, definitely give feedback for the show and anything. And keep in mind that me and Jason are doing this show many, many, many miles apart. He's in California. I'm in Chicago. I'm actually literally about two blocks away from U.S. Cellular Field. So we're doing this pretty far apart. So that's why I'm sure you guys have heard some long, long dead periods where, you know, Jason finishes up or I finish it up and there's nothing after. It's just because we can't see each other. We don't know what we're doing. So that's going to be kind of some problems that will come into it.
But people that do know what they're doing, we've just talked about an organization that doesn't know what they're doing. That's the Chicago White Sox, or at least it's questionable how much they know what they've been doing recently. But the Chicago Bears is the exact opposite. This is a team that I believe is one of the premier organizations in football. And it's very funny that we say this, because in the 90s, you had the Dave Wansetts, you had the Dick Girons, you had the mediocrity, you had cheapness, and you've just had the organization really turn. They hired their first GM. They had the Hatley area. Hatley, rest in peace. He was a tremendous football mind, but he never had the power of a GM. And Jerry Angelo has had that power. He's built a franchise. He brings in talent. He brought in his head coach. They both have a very similar cover two type of mentality. They really fit. Dick Geron and Angelo never really fit. It was never Angelo's guy. And the Bears have turned into a premier team, and I am immediately predicting Super Bowl championships out of the Chicago Bears team. And I think it's positive that the city of Chicago still has the Bulls and the Bears that are both producing, that are both class organizations. One of them is owned by Jerry Reinsdorf. I think everyone knows that, who also owns the White Sox. And the Bears are going to have a tremendous season. I think there's a lot of excitement there. Are you excited for some Chicago Bear football, Mar?
I have to say I am. I'm not that big of a Bears fan. I do watch them. I don't necessarily root them on. I think it is impressive that, especially in football, it's very, very hard to go out there and be a competitive team year after year. And now going into the third year, because you have to assume they are going to be a very good team. I've heard a lot of people saying how their defense is going to be even better this year. And you go back the last 2 years with the Super Bowl and the year before. So that's three. They're looking at three good years in a row that they're going into. So I think that does a lot for the organization.
And not only is this an organization that brings in talent, but this is a class organization. Yes, they've had some off-the-field controversies. They had that whole FBI gun shooting thing. They had the whole Olin Krutz breaking Fred Miller's jaw over the whole situation. They've obviously had the Tank Johnson fiasco. But unlike other teams, the Chicago Bears stood up, they talked to Tank Johnson, and they drew a line in the sand. And when Tank Johnson violated it, even though he was not convicted of ever being under the influence,
I wouldn't go that
the Bears
far.
Released him.
I would not go that far. They were supporting Tank Johnson for doing something incredibly stupid, and they gave some support for Lance Briggs for doing something incredibly stupid. So I'm not necessarily if they're going to say a class organization. I think the Bears are focused on winning and winning only, and it doesn't matter what type of character players they have, that they're going to do everything it takes to win. And if you're talented, you will play. So I wouldn't necessarily say if they're a class organization. They are a very good organization, apparently, because their success is showing that.
I still think now, I'm not saying if you're a business, I would consider them classy, but in the fact of when you look at the NFL as a purpose, and I love what Roger Goodell is doing. I love the fact that he's stepped in and he's been a general. And I'm interested to see what David Stern does in the NBA after this whole Rafer Alston situation, where Alston was convicted of some sort of a battery or assault, something along those lines. And it was a little bit of a shady situation where, for all we know, Alston did absolutely nothing, and this guy's pretty much a guy or gal, whatever the situation is. Yeah, Alston apparently stabbed a guy in the face. And if
neck,
that is
I
true,
believe.
I mean, I want to see what David Stern comes in and takes some of this pressure, because I think the NBA is going to get a lot of heat now, because the NBA may pretty soon be the thug league. And I think to a point, both the NFL and NBA have both been tarnished by the thuggish image. So I want to see what they do to step up.
Who, the NBA?
Yeah, I want to see what the NBA does over these situations, because what Roger Goodell has done has been fantastic for the NFL. The NFL didn't need to make these changes. The NFL has been succeeding. They've been growing. They've been kicking ass.
They don't have to make those changes because people generally don't care. I would think if you take most athletes, I think football players could probably get away with a whole lot more, because just I don't think fans are as attached to football players as they would be to baseball players or even basketball players. So I think he could probably get... What's that?
They're definitely the least recognizable athletes of the major professional sports, aside from hockey. But that's a whole other debate. I'm not going to get into hockey. We don't talk hockey. Remember, we don't know what hockey is. It's not even on a national network, so I don't give a crap. It's got NBCs on Saturday or something. But bottom line, the NFL has stepped up. I mean, they stepped up over the Tank Johnson situation, Pac-Man Jones, Henry on the Bengals. We're talking about Michael Vick now. Who knows how tough of a crime Michael Vick's going to pick? The court of the NFL is going to come down harder on Michael Vick than the actual court in the United States of America. And whether that's right or wrong, the reality is if any of us did these type of things, our firm that we worked for would have fired us a long time ago, because it's absolutely wrong. And I like the fact that the NFL...
Did you just say the NFL is going to come down harder?
That's right.
Jail as opposed to not being allowed to play a game?
Jail as opposed to not being able to make $100 million is a lot harder.
How much has he made so far in his career? I'm sure Michael Vick can live quite comfortably the rest of his life.
And bottom line, Mike Vick, despite what anyone else thinks, I'm looking at you, Mr. Green, Blue Font, is going to do jail time. He's going to do at least a year in prison. And he is going to miss the NFL for 3 years. And when he comes back, everybody's going to be gunning for him. The fans are going to be booing him. And his egotistical self is going to pay the punishment for his stupid decisions. Speechless. This is beautiful.
No, I'm just not very good with these type of arguments, so I can't really get into it, because I'm not even sure what you're arguing about.
Well, put it this way. SSI 71, he says, well, Vic will get a bit uncomfortable when his roommate decides to penetrate his defenses a bit in the cell late at night. What? He jukes left, he jukes right, he is tackled. And Mike Vic, he's no longer going to have that facial expression where he looks all confident. No, 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 no. He's going to have a look that his eyes and face has never seen in his whole life when he gets to deal with prison, even though he's not going to be in any tough prison. But he's definitely not going to – he may very well be in federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison, as the movie Office Space so kindly put it.
Oh, my God.
All right, Caleb's side. I don't think any of us know whether there's a lot of sodomy in medium security federal prisons. Bottom line, though, there's some guy named Bubba, and he may just find Michael Vick. We can only hope.
I'm sure Michael Vick can defend himself.
I hope someone finds fine. Him. But let's get back to the Bears. I mean, we went on a complete tangent here. Rex Grossman.
I wanted to go silent and see how long it would take for the people to X out on the screen and stop listening.
We're like a fine drug. They're hooked. They've heard this live show. Plus, what else are they going to watch? They're going to watch the White Sox, who are consistent now, working on blowing the lead. It's now a 3-2 ball game with two down in the third inning. I'll give you a little bit of a pitch-by-pitch sequence. John Garland's on the mound, runners on the corners. And number 15 is up for the Texas Rangers. This is going to take too long.
Well, see, going back to this Vic thing, I'm sure the people he's going to be in jail with probably have done a lot worse than him, right?
Well, he's going to be a medium. So he's not going to be with guys that have committed violent crimes.
So he's going to be a badass then.
Sodomy type. Is he really going to be a badass? I mean, is he going to have more cigarettes in jail than anyone else?
He's going to be a badass.
Probably not.
If it's a medium security, if like the dogfighting is like a big thing.
Well, at least if he's in this situation, maybe he can find a better entourage. An entourage doesn't rat him out. Because I'm sure his apology was not sincere.
There's no way in hell his apology is sincere. Because the guy, when this whole thing broke out, he didn't go out there and openly say, you know what, I screwed up. He was trying to find a way out of it. He was desperately trying to find a way for the lawyers to make him not guilty. And when it was realized that he had no choice and he was going to get screwed either way, then he comes out in an apology. The apology was so full of shit. Because you know damn well if he had a way of getting out, he wouldn't have made any apology whatsoever. He would have been like, see, I was innocent all along. Let me go back to playing football.
And the best part about this outcome is, the best part is the fact that Michael Vick will no longer be talked about along the same lines as Tom Brady and Peyton Manning or Brett Favre, three of the greatest quarterbacks to ever suit up, because Mike Vick is always talked about, yada, 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 Mike Vick this, Mike Vick that. Well, you know what? Brett Favre, Tom Brady, Eli Manning, they all have Super Bowl rings, something Michael Vick would never, ever get, something he'll never win. The only thing he does, he gets coaches fired. The only thing he does, he throws mediocre passes.
I bet his dog could kick their dog's ass, though. So he wins in one thing.
Oh, he wins in another. You know what? I bet Rex Grossman, when his career is said and done, will have more Super Bowl rings than one Mike Vick. And I imply that he's going to get his first Super Bowl ring this year. And I am betting on Rex Grossman throwing 25 to 30 touchdowns and leading one of the top five ranked offenses in the National Football League. So you put me down for that prediction, and the Bears are going to be good, but they are going to have a tough schedule, and it starts in San Diego, and that is going to be a true test. And their run defense is going to be tested early on. That was one of the weaknesses of the Bears last year, if you consider the team to have weaknesses, but they will have Mike Brown back at the safety position. They've added Adam Archuleta, who really fits into that cover too. He had a lot of success under Lovie Smith in St. Louis, really struggled in Washington last year, but he's going to be an asset in Chicago. And obviously they've upgraded their run defense, or at least kept it the same. Now that Tommy Harris will be back, they traded for I can't think of the guy's name from Philadelphia, Johnson or whatever his name is.
Who?
Darren Walker, that's it.
Oh, I would have told you that if you would have said who.
And then you have Dusty Dvorak, who's really played great this preseason on that defensive front. And Mark Anderson, Adewale Ogunleye, and Alex Brown as your three ends. This is a very good defensive unit. They got all their linebackers back for at least this season. And then brings them probably Walker, crash his car to some other organization, whatever he may see fit. But this defense is going to get tested early on with LaDainian Tomlinson in week one and Larry Johnson in week two. So I think that's going to be good. We're going to really get to see and learn a lot about this team, especially how it plays on the road in San Diego. And San Diego is one of the three best teams in the AFC, along with the New England Patriots and Denver Broncos.
All right,
that's
all
right, people.
All right,
no Indianapolis Colts.
All right, hold on. I'm looking to head out here in a little bit. If you want to keep on doing this, you're more than welcome. But very quickly, when it comes to the Bears, what's one thing that does concern you? I mean, they're going to the Super Bowl in your mind, but what's one thing that could stop them? If there's one thing on this Bears team that would be glaring, or you could consider it glaring, or close to glaring, what would it be?
I don't think the Bears have any glaring weaknesses. However, any team that plays in the National Football League is always one injury away from being a mediocre team. The White Sox, Bears lost Tommy Harris last year, and it made him a lot more mediocre defensively. And obviously, you got to factor in the fact that a Brian Urlacher injury would devastate this defense. His team is well under 500. They've actually pretty much never win when Urlacher isn't on the field. So that's obviously a case. But if you kind of count major injuries aside, and it's hard to do that because it happens in football. Football is a hard physical contact sport, and injuries happen. I would say the number one weakness in the Bears, a potential hole, is their lack of depth at the running back position. Thomas Jones and Cedric Benson, you knew what you had in those two guys. You knew whether one was down, you probably had a good odds that the other one was going to be healthy and able to produce. I'm a huge Cedric Benson fan. I think he's probably going to have a 1,300-yard season if he can stay healthy. But if he goes down, I'm not buying on Adrian Peterson as a full-time backup running back. I'm not necessarily buying on Garrett Wolf as a guy that could come in and be more of a backup running back, at least not yet. I like Garrett Wolf in that third down role for the Bears, even though I think they overdrafted in him, but his speed is something that's special, and the Bears' offense is going to have a lot more speed with Greg Olsen, Devin Hester. They already have Bernard Berrien. Mark Bradley's healthy. Mark Bradley's stronger. Berrien's a bit stronger. Then you have Mushin Muhammad, the veteran, in there, and Mushin teaches these guys. He makes his team a lot better based on what he can help these guys, the young receivers, and even the young tight ends to a point in practice. And then obviously you have Desmond Clark. This is a team loaded with weapons on offense, but if the running back position fails or the older offensive line really fails, that's where I think the problems are, not at the quarterback position, because I'm perfectly confident in one Rex Grossman and the fast strides he's made to his footwork under one Pep Hamilton. So I think that sums it up. I think we're going to call it a show because I got a softball game to get to. I got a couple home runs to hit, a couple great plays out in left field to make. You know, I want to win. I'm a winner. I don't want to follow what the Sox has done.
You're a winner.
So maybe the Sox can.
What position you play, Jason?
Left field.
Yeah. And you've done well this year?
This is going to be my first actual regular season game. We had a little preseason game last week, so this is going to be the first time I play softball or any type of baseball in quite a long time. So it's going to be interesting.
Are you a ringer?
You know what? I have a lot of God-given talent, so I'm pretty confident I'm gonna do my job.
Wow.
But I'm also pretty confident that my arm would make Scott Pasetnik look like Vlad Guerrero's.
Well, we're gonna call it a show. We really, 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 really want you guys to give us some feedback. Let us know what you thought of the show. Obviously, it's not the greatest show in the world. We got some work to do, but we do want you to give us kind of feedback. See if you actually been listening, what you think of it. Should we continue doing it live? Because before we were just doing recordings. Should we just stick to the recording? Should we not bother with this? Because this does take some time. It does take a little bit of preparation as far as getting together and doing this live and setting it all up. But
I think we're already seeing the feedback. It's a lot funner for us to do this live. I think you guys are liking it. I've seen some good comments.
Long as they're nice. I know there was a couple mean comments. As long as they're nice, we're good.
And the one thing we want you to do is let us know when you want a permanent, like what type of time slot you guys want us to be on, like once a week, when works good for you guys.
Yes.
And we'll try our best to accommodate that for the most part.
We will try our best. And, of course, we'll always be on this channel. It's Ustream. We're using the channel .com/ the Southside Report. This is going to be the kind of the stream that we'll be using from here on out. And we'll be posting it on Sox Talk, or Jason will be posting it on Sox Talk as we go. 3 a.m.? Okay.
Who needs sleep? Sleep's for the week, all right? Sleep's for the week. So thanks for listening. It was great having all your feedbacks in there. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you guys back next week.